Jeremiah chapter 22, verses 1 to 30. Yes, I know I've looked at several of these verses before, but I want to take a broad brush to the chapter, take an overview as we leave it. Jeremiah 22, then, the entire chapter, 1 to 30. Disaster for the kingdom. The title over my Bible, it's not inspired, but the title the translators gave it was this: Judgment Against Evil Kings. But it amounts to the same thing. Here God spells out, through various personalities, various kings, the disaster for the kingdom of Judah. Israel is gone, and now it's going to be the end for Judah. God deals here through Jeremiah with various kings, bringing up the end of Judah as a kingdom. And it is a disastrous end, with evil kings dragging this people down into disaster. Let me just pick out some of the things. They will be carted away, not simply carried away, but carted away with no return. Look at verse 11. For this is what the Lord says. Remember, it's the Lord against his people. This is such a devastating point. It is the Lord against his people. It's not Assyria for Israel. It's not Babylon for Judah. It is, of course. But ultimately, it's God against his people, because this people have gone against God. They have forsaken him. They've broken his covenant, transgressed his laws, paid no attention to the principles he set out for them in the old covenant. And verse 11, for this is what the Lord says about Shalom, son of Josiah, who succeeded his father as king of Judah, but has gone from this place. He will never return. Never return. This is called Jehoah. This is Jehoahaz. He's called Shalom and Jehoahaz. He will never return. He will die in the place where they have led him captive. He will not see this land again. The land that God gave to Israel when delivering them, the promised land, delivering them from the slavery of Egypt. That's verse 11. How about verse 24 to 27? As surely as I live, declares the Lord, even if you, Jehoiakim, again, there can be a variation here, but Jehoiakim, even if you, Jehoiakim, son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were a signet ring on my right hand, I would still pull you off. It's God doing it, you see. Pulling this ring off. It's a graphic picture. I will hand you over to those who seek your life, those you fear, to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and to the Babylonians. I will hurl you, what a word, throw you, hurl you, and the mother who gave you birth into another country where neither of you was born, and there you will both die. You will never come back to the land you long to return to. Yes, you will long for it then. Psalm 137, by the rivers of Babylon, we sat down and wept when we remembered Jerusalem. But it's all too late then, of course. It is the end. This is what we read in verse 30. This is what the Lord says. Record this man as if childless, a man who will not prosper in his lifetime. For none of his offspring will prosper. None will sit on the throne of David or rule any more in Judah. Because they've been breaking the covenant, of course. Verse 13. Woe to him who builds his palace by unrighteousness, his upper rooms by injustice. You get it in verse 17. Your eyes and your heart are set only on dishonest gain, on shedding innocent blood, and on oppression and extortion. This is breaking the old covenant. We're in the old covenant days here. But they're building their hopes on cedar. Cedar comes over again and again in this chapter. The wealth of Lebanon, the cedar palaces, the property. You get it in verses 13 to 17. I will build myself a great palace with spacious upper rooms. So he makes larger windows in it, panels it with cedar, and decorates it with red in red. Yes, you get this wealth and property and cedar. It's verse 23, you get it here. You who live in Lebanon, not literally in Lebanon, but in the palace of Lebanon, Lebanon the cedar and so on, who are nestled in cedar buildings, how you will groan when pangs come upon you, pain like that of a woman in labor. It's not cedar that makes a king. Verse 15, does it make you a king to have more and more cedar? How about food and drink? How about paying the covenant and so on? All this leads them to false hopes. It leads them to think that they are safe because of the palace they have built, the buildings they've set up, the schemes they brought in, the plans they have, the hopes they have, but it's all going to be dashed to pieces. There was good examples for them, 15 and 16. Your father, he had food and drink. He did what was right and just, so all went well with him. He defended the cause of the poor and the needy, and so all went well. Again, that's old covenant. He was keeping the covenant, and God was blessing him. The world will not help you. All your allies, verse 20, are crushed. They're warned in verse 21. I warned you when you felt secure, but you said, I will not listen. Stubborn, rebellious, defiant. This has been your way from your youth. You have not obeyed me. You have not kept my covenant. You have strayed. Not just simply strayed. You've been defiant about going against the covenant. And captivity and shame will be yours. Is this man Jehoiakim a despised broken pot, verse 28, an object no one wants? Why will he and his children be hurled out, cast into a land they do not know? They ignored the prophets. They ignored Jeremiah. They were defiant and stubborn. And captivity and shame waited for them. And so we get this tremendous word in verse 29. Oh, land, 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 hear the word of the Lord. Well, let us now just simply apply these things. We must, my brother and sister, I speak to you who are believers with me. We must apply this to ourselves, individually, our homes, our families. Above all, I think at this time, the relevance of it. But personally, yes. Families, yes. But in the ecclesia, in the church. How today we're repeating the errors of Judah in those far-off days. We've gone to the world. We're kicking over the covenant of Christ. We're dragging the world. More than dragging, we're inviting the world and welcoming the world into the churches. The churches now and the world are becoming one together. Entertainment houses, pleasure-seeking, self-fulfillment, self-esteem, honouring men, not honouring God, and so on and so on. And what will the end of it be? Disaster. Like they relied upon cedar and buildings and schemes and plans and possessions. The equivalent today. We have all our wonderful schemes. We have all our clever management reports and devices. And we've got bodies set up now, committees set up now, traveling secretaries building up this work. So it's all going on. And it's all like peas in a pod. And it's world and church, church and world becoming one. The end of it, my friend, will be captivity, shame, and disaster. It won't be Babylon. It won't be Nebuchadnezzar. It won't be war and so on, no. But it will be disaster. I know that I must raise my voice. And in verse 29, oh, land, land, land. It's not literally land now. Oh, believers. Oh, elders, oh, teachers, oh, pastors. Oh, those writing the books, bringing all this stuff in. Oh, will you not hear? Will I not hear? Will you not hear, my brother and sister? The word of the Lord. This is what the Lord says. And what he says here is disaster for the kingdom. I fear it will be the same for us. I know it will be. I fear it will be for us if we will be like Judah and be defiant, remember? But you would not hear. You would not listen. You were defiant. You were rebellious. You were defiant. Verse 21 again. I warned you, but you said, I will not listen. This has been your way from your youth. You have not obeyed me, and I fear there's a new generation growing up now of believers who know nothing else but this defiance and this rebellion. Oh, may God have mercy upon us. Else it will be said for us, disaster for the church in the West in these days.